It really doesn't matter whether President Trump signs the bill or not.
Oh, this economist says the U.S. will most likely make the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act law. This is Thursday, the 28th of November, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, some of the victims of the slaughter of some migrants in the U.K. are returned to Vietnam. This is Thanksgiving in the United States. It all comes your way on today's VOA Asia. One of the few bipartisan measures to appear before the U.S. Congress of late has been passage of the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. The almost unanimous vote in both the U.S. House and Senate required the U.S. government to impose sanctions against Chinese and Hong Kong officials responsible for human rights abuses in Hong Kong, and require the United States State Department and other agencies to conduct an annual review to determine whether changes in Hong Kong's political status, meaning its relationship with mainland China, justify changing the unique favorable trade relations between the U.S. and Hong Kong. The measure is now before President Donald Trump. He faces what appears to be a difficult decision for him. On one hand, he expresses support for Hong Kong protesters, at least most of them. On the other, he says his negotiators are close to agreement with China on an initial agreement on trade. Joining us on VOA Asia is Jeff Moon, former assistant trade representative for China in the Obama administration and now president of China Moon Strategies, LLC. He joins us via Skype. Jeff, tell us more about the U.S., what the U.S. president is facing.
Well, he's facing a dilemma of his own creation. Unlike his predecessors, President Trump introduced the art of the deal, where he has brought unrelated issues into the trade discussions in order to gain leverage. And so Xi Jinping is now returning the favor by trying to bring unrelated issues into the trade dispute. You know, previously, we would just say, this is not about trade. We're not going to talk about it. Having said that, it really doesn't matter whether President Trump signs the bill or not. If he does not sign it, if he does nothing, after 10 days, it becomes law under the U.S. Constitution. If he vetoes it, Congress will almost certainly override him. And Ted Cruz, one of the conservatives, and others have openly threatened that. Congress passed the bill by almost unanimous consent. Only one person dissented. So Congress is certainly going to vote this in, and he's going to have to face the consequences with regard to the trade war no matter what. Xi Jinping also faces a dilemma of his own creation, and that is that he and the Chinese government have promoted a false narrative for many months now that the U.S. government is behind the protests. The elections, of course, over the weekend proved that that's not true. But he has created this expectation that he may strike back at the United States after all this time, and so he's trying to use the trade war is perhaps an instance where he can show that he's taking resolute action on this and, in addition, gain some negotiating leverage. I think in the end, what's going to happen is that this will not significantly affect the trade war, that the trade war is important enough to both countries that they need to find a resolution. It's causing enough damage to both economies, and the agreement that they are about to reach is, quite frankly, modest enough. It doesn't even address the main issues in the trade war. It's modest enough that they should and can reach it, and it will be modestly helpful to both countries if they do so. So I think Xi Jinping will find a way to respond to the U.S. in a way that doesn't involve the trade war, but nonetheless expresses some kind of displeasure. And President Trump needs to help him try to find that kind of a solution to this impasse.
Do the Chinese have to find a way to save face, or do they have one?
I think they do need to find a way to save face because it's all about the nature of the conflict over Hong Kong. For the Chinese, Hong Kong is about sovereignty and reassuming sovereignty after what they call a century of humiliation. For the U.S., this is about human rights. I mean, that's something quite different. So for China, I think this is actually a much more important issue. Hong Kong is a much more important issue than the trade war is. So they will need to have to find some way to save face. And frankly, their policy has been failing for many months. And they are looking for a way to shift blame also for that failed policy. And they have sort of created the narrative that the United States is the place where that blame should be shifted.
If this chapter number one of any reported trade agreement does go through, how much is that going to accomplish? How much further do the two sides have to go?
Well, it will be important for the U.S. because farmers are hurting and they will, according to the president, receive $40 to $50 billion in sales of U.S. agricultural products. From the Chinese perspective, they need to buy the agricultural goods that are on the table here. They need the soybeans, they need the pork, and the other things are there. So this is entirely in their interests to do this. The question is over tariffs, how much tariffs will be affected, and that's probably one of the final sticking points here. However, those issues are important, and getting a deal would be a very good thing. But the entire USTR complaint that was filed a year and a half ago is not addressed in this agreement. We're not talking about the practice of forcing mandatory joint ventures or subsidies or cyber hacking or other regulations that are overbroad and tilt the playing field. We're not talking about Huawei. We're not talking about a variety of emerging issues and in regulations that are not coming up. They're going to hamper trade. So there is an awful lot that's going to be left on the table. The question in my mind is, you know, it has been so incredibly difficult to reach this agreement, which touches on all the easy issues. So will they really ever be able to get to the more difficult issues? And I think that it's more likely, it's not so likely that they will actually get to those, what they're calling phase two issues, by the time of the election next year.
Well, without that happening, what happens as far as China's relationship and China's ideas about what to do about Hong Kong?
Well, Hong Kong is really is a separate issue from the trade agreement. And Hong Kong, the real problem here is preserving autonomy in Hong Kong. China committed in 1984 in the joint statement with Britain that it would preserve Hong Kong's autonomy. And at the time of the reversion, the basic law also reinforces that. The U.S. Hong Kong Policy Act of 1982 also reinforces Hong Kong's autonomy. The question is whether, independent of the trade situation, whether China will grant Hong Kong the autonomy that it promised or whether it will continue to reduce that autonomy. Everyone agrees that China has sovereignty over Hong Kong. Everyone agrees that the formula going forward is one country, two systems. The question is whether China will allow that second system to have the autonomy that it promised 20 years ago.
But one has to think that Beijing does not want another Tiananmen Square.
Of course not. And I think that you see that in the way that they've been trying to manage it. They have been trying to manage it without resorting to those kind of tactics. And I think that they've also been trying to manage it locally, although there has been somewhat of a Chinese presence now coming into the force that's out there. I don't think that's a result that anyone is looking for. I think everyone's trying to avoid that. But I think a lot of people are hoping that China will listen to the message that was sent last weekend in the Hong Kong district elections and perhaps moderate or not increase the pressure that it's putting on the Hong Kong people.
Thank you, Jeff Moon. The bodies of some of the Vietnamese who died when human traffickers carried them by truck to England last month were repatriated to their homeland Wednesday and have been taken to their families. AP's Charles Ledesma has more.
The bodies of some of the victims found in a British truck are being repatriated to Vietnam. The bodies of 16 of the 39 Vietnamese who died when human traffickers carried them by truck to England last month have been flown back to their homeland and are being taken to their families. One father of an 18-year-old victim says he had been informed by a local government official that his son's remains would be brought home Wednesday, along with six other victims. The man told the AP, "I'm devastated, but I'll be happy to have him back with us soon." I'm Charles de Ledesma.
We continue now. Many new refugees in America experience culture shock when they first arrive in the United States. Many have to deal with a new language, culture, and even holidays. But settled refugees can play a big role in helping new arrivals adapt to life in the U.S. One example is the Ethiopian Community Center, which hosts a Thanksgiving meal every year for new refugees. VOA's Shanaz Nafis has more on the event.
For newly arrived refugees in United States, a Thanksgiving get-together may be as foreign as this live Irish dance performance. This annual Thanksgiving holiday aims to help refugees adjust to life and the many cultures in America. The Ethiopian community hosted this gathering just outside Washington, D.C. The refugees here come mostly from war-torn countries like Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan.
Today we enjoy about the Thanksgiving party, and all of the people, especially Afghans, coming in this party.
I like Thanksgiving. I greet everyone who are here, and I thank God for America people for everything we give us today.
This event is especially meaningful for Babu Adu, who fled Nigeria 4 years ago to escape violence in his homeland.
My background as a refugee, that means a lot to me because I look around and I see a lot of different faces and cultures, and I got very emotional.
4 years ago, Adu's life was full of challenges when he started his new life in the United States. The Ethiopian Community Development Council helped Babu resettle in Virginia. But organizers say in actuality, the entire community pitches in.
The whole idea is to introduce our refugees to the larger community so that there will be an opportunity to know, to learn from one another.
Some volunteer simply to help people feel welcomed.
I love to welcome new people to our community and to bring in and accept everyone. And I wanted to share a Thanksgiving is to sit down and bring families from all over the place together to share a meal.
Many say they are thankful to have fled their troubled homelands, but also hope one day they will be reunited with their loved ones.
My brother is in Nigeria, and I've not seen him for 4 years. That is, sometimes I get sad when I think about it, but you know, I would love for him to come here and join me, yeah?
Shehnaz Nafis, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
U.S. President Donald Trump has followed a White House Thanksgiving tradition by pardoning Butter, the turkey, and his alternate, Bread. The president also honored his own tradition of cracking jokes while granting clemency to the poultry. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story.
Butter, I wish you a lot of luck, but I hereby grant you a full and complete pardon.
Honoring a White House tradition, President Donald Trump pardoned Butter, the turkey, and his alternate Bread from their fate of being served at Thanksgiving dinner. And Trump cracked jokes about impeachment, noting that the birds have been raised to remain calm under any condition.
Which will be very important because they've already received subpoenas to appear in Adam Schiff's basement on Thursday.
In last year's pardon, Trump also referenced congressional investigations on presidential actions.
Even though peas and carrots have received a presidential pardon, I have warned them that House Democrats are likely to issue them both subpoenas.
In 2017, Trump joked that he would not overturn the pardon given by his predecessor, President Barack Obama.
I have been informed by the White House counsel's office that Tater and Tots pardons cannot, under any circumstances, be revoked.
Trump is not the first president to gobble up turkey satire.
You are hereby pardoned.
That recently, I've been taking a series of executive actions that don't require congressional approval. Well, here's another one.
Not surprising, since in these events, presidents get to lighten up and show who they are as a person, said White House historian Matthew Costello.
President Trump is also aware of things in the press and how he's covered. So I think he sees it as an opportunity then to sort of, tease and make fun of some of those things.
Pardoning turkeys has been a presidential tradition since George H.W. Bush in 1989. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News at the White House.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter. Nelson Lopes is at the controls. Our managing editor is Diane Gao, and our team consists of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hai Young and Candace. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day and happy Thanksgiving.